In progress.
Hi, hi. Hi, Heidi. Hi, Rich. Did you get to see your grandkids, Heidi? Am I muted? No.
Hi, kids.
Hi, Echo.
How you been?
Hey, I'm walking again. I'm dancing again.
Yay.
I know.
Yeah, I lost about 3 weeks of March myself to a bizarre medical condition.
Oh, yes.
Which luckily turned out to be easy to fix, but it sort of laid me out for about 3 weeks.
That was scary.
It was really weird. That's an unusual thing. And anyway, but it was easy to fix. So I'm all better.
Yay. So you're back to normal. Yay. Hi.
My version of normal. I wouldn't wish it on anybody else.
I get it.
I know. I ran into one of my former SOU colleagues yesterday at downtown and said, you know, Chris, I hate to say this, but when I retired, I discovered I actually need to have meetings to go to. So.
No, I get that. I was just going to have fun when I retired.
Yeah.
And have joy. And then I realized, no, I got to have some kind of service, you know,
yeah.
It's part of my life.
Yeah. It's funny. And I particularly like our meetings because it feels like we actually get something done. That makes a difference, at least a little bit of difference in the world,
yeah.
Instead of committee meetings at the university.
Yeah.
And of course, now I get to miss the strike, which is even better.
Oh, even better. Wow.
Yeah. We've been close to striking several times, but this time it seems more serious.
It does.
Yeah.
It does. Linda Reed, can you hear me? Joy is having trouble getting a connection. She said she sent you an email asking to resend the link, but she hadn't heard from you.
Oh, I see it here. Oh, here we go.
Okay.
I'll send it to her right now. Hold on.
Okay.
Such beautiful weather today, huh?
It's gorgeous.
I bought plants.
Oh, at the farmer's market or?
No, at the Grange. At the Grange. It just, you know, you can't resist buying plants when it's like this. Mm-hmm. But I just do pots and containers, so.
Nice.
Yeah.
Did you get flowering ones?
Yeah, I bought, I just sort of buy stuff and see whether or not I kill it. So it's some asters and petunias and.
Oh, the petunias will do well. They do great up here.
Yeah, I usually don't kill petunias unless the earwigs get them.
Oh yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So and I did buy a little container of sugar snap peas.
Nice.
Which I may or may not kill. Oh well. And if you know anybody who wants to dig up some daylilies. I have lots of extra daylilies that would love to be dug.
I do.
Oh,
I'm going to be okay. Out of town for the next week, but I'll come dig them when I get back.
Yeah, no, please do, because they spread, they naturalize, you end up with too many, and they're indestructible. I brought my original daylilies with me from Iowa in 1998.
Oh.
So that's how long I've had these, and they just keep growing. Hi, Joy.
Joy, but she's listed as Linda. Yeah.
Hi.
Oh, she looks like Linda Reed, but it's definitely Joy.
That's funny.
It's the glasses.
I sent you my link, so yeah.
Whatever works.
Yeah, I never got the first email, so I'm glad that I'm here. Yay!
Me too.
Good to see you.
You. I will check on that and see why that email didn't go through.
Cass, you're just getting to watch all this.
I know. Yeah.
So
I feel honored. Thank you.
Chris isn't coming. And who else are we missing now?
Well, Reese will not be here. It's spring break for students.
Ah, okay. Well, we might be there.
But her position is non-voting anyway. So it actually wasn't that
and,
big a deal.
And Gina?
I did not hear from Gina, but Lita...
Hear from Gina, and she's traveling, and so she said just to give us her apologies, and she'll be with us next time and certainly be looking at the results that we come up with.
All right, well, then I'm going to call this meeting to order. Is it that time? It is
3:58.
All right. Okay with if we start moving ahead?
Sure.
Yeah. All right. So big meeting today, lots and lots of stuff going on. I know that there's some concern about the conflict of interest statement, and we will do that when we get to the agenda item that it refers to. So approval of minutes? Jackie?
I move to approve the minutes.
I'll second that.
Heidi? Any comments? All right, good to go. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Passed. Do we have any visitors besides the visitors that are here to talk about their grant applications? Do you have any public comment? Okay, well, let's just dive right in here. We're going to go through the Community Development Block Grant applications, get presentations, then we will go into review and recommendations from that, and then we'll move to the Affordable Housing Trust Fund applications, and then review and recommendation. Are you staring at me funny, Linda Reed? No, okay, I think that's how we're going to do it. So is there anyone that would like to declare a conflict of interest?
I just want to give a statement.
Okay.
I just would like to let people know that I'm on the board of Aura and that I have no financial gain that will happen in these proceedings tonight. And I believe I can make a fair and just decision in the process.
All right. Any comments? Anybody else? Yeah. All right. I only see Aura here. Do we have Maslow and Rogue Retreat in the waiting room? No. And the amount of time that we're giving each presentation is?
I'm sorry, Linda. Rogue Retreat is in the waiting room. I'm moving them over. I was just checking my email. That's why I was giving you a funny look. It was actually giving my email a funny look.
All right.
to see if I had heard from anyone from Maslow Project. Oh, here's Kathy. Nope. Let me move her over. So I'm moving some people over right now.
All right.
And if I do find Maslow, I will move them over, and then I'll let you know via chat, and we can just shuffle the order.
Okay. How much time do you want to give each presentation?
You know, I allocated 10 minutes each on the agenda, which would make each of the the first presentation would be 40. We'd have 40 minutes for presentations and questions, and then the next one would be 30. So we could adjust if we need to.
So Cass, Phil, if you would take, you know, maybe 6 minutes so that we have time for some questions back and forth when you're done, does that work?
I have a quick question. So we are applying for the CDBG as well as the CDBG CARES, and it looked like there was 10 minutes per. So if I could have a little bit longer just to give you my updates.
Yes, I want that.
I will be succinct, though, I promise.
Yes, we did allocate 10 minutes for each of those. So yeah, you've got a block of time.
Okay.
You want to go?
Sure.
Okay.
So first of all, thank you so much, everyone, and for all the work that you do for our community and for your time and efforts. And we just greatly appreciate you. I wanted to start just by giving you an overview of our past 2 years. So in the past 2 years, we've experienced a threefold growth in visits to our resource center, and we've expanded our shelter service from a 5-month nighttime only congregate winter shelter to a year-round 24/7 non-congregate facility that offers on-site case management designed to help guests stabilize their lives and find permanent housing. With this explosive growth in service has come a more than tenfold increase in our expenses. Before the pandemic, we operated the resource center with 6 paid staff and a core of volunteers, most of whom were retirees. The pandemic required us to suspend the volunteer program out of concern for their safety. The former winter shelter, which operated only at night, was staffed almost entirely by volunteers. Our new 24/7 365 shelter requires around-the-clock paid staff. The winter shelter provides meals donated by volunteers, while our new shelter nutrition program provides meals that we must purchase 7 nights a week. We are grateful for the continued support of individuals, foundations, businesses, and governments. This broad support is critical as we do not have an endowment. While we are financially stable, we do operate with a deficit. Raising funds is the only way we can operate as a much-needed state-of-the-art human services hub. We are proud to be the first recipient of a Project Turnkey grant. That $4.2 million grant was used for the Super 8 motel purchase, with a small set aside to partially fund an ADA-accessible elevator. The grant did not fund any of the needed renovations nor ongoing operations. What it did fund was remarkable. The new Aura Center at 2350 Ashland Street is fulfilling our vision of a single place where unhoused and other economically stressed community members can come to receive assistance. Once renovations are complete, it will not only be a shelter with 52 shelter rooms and a capacity to shelter up to 72 guests at a time, but a place where anyone can come for aid delivered either by our staff or by other community partners. We are particularly excited by the prospect of having a permanent on-site wellness center where La Clinica will provide medical and behavioral health care 5 days a week. In everything we at Aura do, we seek to fulfill our mission, moving people from crisis to stability. The new Aura Center is a place where this vision is becoming a reality. And I would just love to offer a tour to any of you anytime, by the way. Is it possible for me to share my screen, Linda?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay.
Here we go.
Okay.
So to give you an overview, Aura's 3 programs we operate: our community resource center and our emergency shelter and our laundry shower trailer. Our resource center and our emergency shelter are operating out of 2350 Ashland Street. The resource center is where our neighbors, housed or unhoused, find hope and help. Anyone can walk through our doors and receive services. We're open 5 days a week. When somebody walks through our doors, we really never know what they're going to be looking for or what kind of services they may need. But when they work with a navigator, they can work with a navigator from one time up to years long. And the navigation services we provide go throughout all 3 programs. So we have navigators at the shelter, at the resource center, and at the laundry shower trailer. Our goal is to really come alongside of people and work with them to remove the barriers that they want to work on. We don't get out in front of them and tell them what they need to work on, but we are really there to provide services and build a trusting relationship with all the people we serve. Our Oro Emergency Shelter is fully up and operational since April 1st, and we're providing low barrier shelter 24/7, 365 to at-risk adults. The shelter navigators are working alongside all of our guests. All the majority of the conversations we're having with the people we serve are around what their housing plan is. Our laundry shower trailer is operational, and it's operating out of the Grove space. We're there on Tuesdays and Thursdays from 10 to 2. We've got professional cleaning staff there as well as navigator, and we're providing showers for the pallet shelter community on East Main as well. Just to give you a couple updates. So on average, we serve about 1,200 guest visits per month. And last year we had over 20,000 essential services. That's anything from an ID, job services, housing, benefits. We also provide primary mail services, and we're a primary mail home for the people we serve. Also in fiscal year 21, we kept 576 individuals housing protected. So we are serving a lot of our Ashland community members living at or below poverty, and we really work to keep them housed as well as help them pay their utilities. We also found 392 individuals new housing. And our temporary shelter. So to date, since April 1st last year, we've served 170 shelter guests, and we're running at a 45 shelter guest occupancy until we're fully operational when we're done with our renovations. And so far we've helped 32 shelter guests get housed. That's exciting. The Aura shower trailer, we are referring this year for laundry until we're fully operational from COVID, but we're providing 160 showers on average a month. In February, we provided 160 showers. Our yearly average is 1,730 showers. When we're all done with our renovations, we'll have 52 shelter rooms and a capacity to serve up to 72 people a night. We'll have a social gathering area for our shelter guests, an expanded resource center with a family bathroom, 4 more ADA accessible shelter rooms, an ADA accessible elevator, a fire suppression system throughout, and new electric heat and air units in each room, electric air filtration system throughout the building, 3 ADA accessible non-gendered bathrooms. We'll have La Clinica in-house, and we're providing a space and renovating it for them to provide services to shelter guests as well as guests of the resource center. And then we'll also have a community partner room so that community partners can come in and meet folks literally where they're at. So we've already been in talks with Addictions Recovery Center, Department of Human Services to provide SNAP benefits, signed up for health insurance, credit counseling, you name it, the sky's the limit for the amount of community partners that can utilize that space. What we're asking for with this CDBG part of the grant is $162,419 to pay for and install an elevator. We've already done the elevator shaft throughout. The building was early 1980s building. It didn't have a fire suppression system or an elevator, so we had to start right away with renovations and have been raising dollars as we go. Just to give you a little bit some pictures. It's hard to tell, but this is the shaft. We had to dig a 7-foot elevator pit, and it's ready to go. It just needs an elevator and installation. This, by the way, is our front resource center room, and it's has the family bathroom, and it will be carpeted this week. This is where folks can come in and make appointments and utilize this room as well as the room adjacent to it. Telephones, computers, and work with community partners. Just a couple more pictures of the family bathroom and the front resource area. So that's that ask. It looks like Joy has her hand up, and unless you want me to go forward with the other CDBG cares.
Let's take them one at a time.
So I was just wondering, and perhaps I missed it, when is the renovation date? When will you anticipate that being completed?
When we're done raising the dollars. So we have a $1.5 million renovation budget. We've raised $800,000 so far. And right now, actually, just I'm waiting for more dollars to install the elevator. So the elevator, I'm storing it right now because it's already been delivered in Portland. And so I'm just paying to store until I finish raising those dollars. But if all goes well, it would be, we would hope to be finished by early fall, late summer.
Great.
Thank you.
More questions? Rich?
Okay, I had a couple, I've already forgot one, but one of them is I'm really interested in the folks who find housing after being at the center. And I'm wondering if you have statistics about, I remember my second question, so I'll do that, about where they are going. Are we getting them more into like Section 8s in different places? Are they anybody finding private housing? And then how many are able to connect? Do we have anything like permanent supportive housing? And what the percentages are with theirs?
So great question. Right now, up to this point and up to this month, we're now working with Debbie Boyd at the Continuum of Care. And so she oversees all of our service point and helps us with how we capture data in service point and shelter point. So because we have an ongoing relationship with the people we serve, oftentimes, even if they're going to go out and they're going to go to a different shelter, Rogue Retreat on East Main or Kelly Shelter or wherever, a lot of folks are still, they still come in and work weekly with our navigators. And so all the navigators got together, and that's, they're now tracking the amount, and we'll be able to put that in place going forward. We get folks in VA housing, in transitional housing, and we really utilize all of our community partnerships that we've always worked with, you know, 23 plus community partners.
Okay.
We also just took on last year, we took on a permanent supportive housing grant from RVCOG. And so we've got two families in permanent supportive housing. We've got another one going in. And then next year's grant cycle will actually increase the amount of folks that we're able to get housed. Also, the navigators have relationships with local commercial property real estate. That's not commercial property, real estate property managers and landlords. And so you name it, we're... And it was difficult. It was difficult, especially after the fire. And, you know, we've always said even we had less than a 1% occupancy rate in Ashland, but that's not even true. So they're going all over.
Right. So let me just say it would be extremely useful for us on the Housing Commission to have some kind of analysis, not now, but eventually have an analysis, because we are able to encourage and incentivize different programs. And if we know where, it's all wonderful that this is all going on, but I'm suspecting that there's also a big need in certain areas that we would, if we had the data, we could use. And so the last question was about, at one point you said Ashland residents that were able to serve, but my understanding is that we really are now a regional program, no?
And that's
wonderful. I think that's where we want to be. But I just, it's different than it used to be, where we'd say, well, we want to get Ashland homeless into things. Is that correct?
Yes. So we receive federal grants and state grants, and we do serve Jackson County. For instance, when we opened up and shelter season was starting, we received a lot of referrals from the Medford Livability team looking to get folks on our waiting list, getting, you know, have SPDAT scores and intakes. So yes, and just by nature of where we're located and where we're located on the south end of the valley, we do serve a lot of folks that identify Ashland as their home. And yes, we do serve folks that come in from Jackson County. Joy, looks like you have your hand up again. Oh, you're muted.
I didn't. I just forgot to press the button. Sorry. Thanks.
Yes.
Yes.
We've talked before about the relationship between ORA and the Long-Term Recovery Group and fire survivors. And I know there were some folks who got moved out of the Emigrant Lake RV park in recent weeks. Are you still dealing with fire survivor populations, people with FEMA issues, et cetera?
We are, and we imagine, given now that FEMA folks are going to have to start paying rent, part of what we do at ORA, with especially with all that $1.5 million of pass-through COVID-related money, if people had COVID-related income loss and then affected by the fires, that we could help them. But yes, we are still seeing folks coming through that have been impacted by the fire. And we will continue. In fact, part of our ask for the CDBG CARES is around housing match, housing protection, and new housing.
Yeah, I think Kathy Callie and I both have other hats that relate to fire survivors. So I would love at some point when you can, if you've got some not too hard to get hold of numbers about the, you know, fire survivor related issues and where those folks are getting relocated, whether it's into the transitional housing in Medford, those motel conversions, into FEMA trailers, into mobile home parks, et cetera. That would be great to have, but it's probably not the total top priority for you right now.
Well, I mean, it's all a priority because we're here. The nature of the way our resource center works is that anybody can walk through our doors. And that's the beauty of how we provide services. And we also have not all the folks who lost their homes, obviously, but folks that are Spanish speaking. We do have Spanish speaking staff, front Good. Office staff, and navigation. Awesome. So that was a big part of our response. With a lot of Spanish-speaking families that lost their homes.
Are you helping people negotiate those FEMA trailer rent increases?
Not so much directly. I mean, we're not emergency response. So even a lot of the folks that ended up going into Medford, Phoenix hotels, when we did our analysis and assessment of what Ashland needed and the way we operated with our project turnkey dollars was to really respond to the chronically unhoused and just the unhoused folks. And just by the by, because we know that in California, Oregon, Washington, and Hawaii, those four states, we house half of the nation's chronically unhoused. And so part of that response is emergency shelter and navigation services. So,
yeah. Thanks.
Okay, Heidi, and then Kathy.
I'm really grateful for all that ORA is doing. I have a question about people timing out of staying in the ORA center, and what percentage of people don't find housing, and do you prioritize how people are put back on the street when they've stayed the amount of time they're allowed to stay?
Thanks. Hi. Yeah, that is a hard question. Part of the big money that we are applying for, especially through HUD, requires us to, because we're emergency shelter, to keep people housed 6 months or less. And then, you know, I mean, if we lived in a big city and we had lots of workforce housing and affordable housing and low-income housing and transitional and all those, housing, then we would, that would be a natural next step, which it is. So we have had people time out, and right now, main thing, all of our staff that are cross-training as navigators, our shelter staff, our navigators, all of our conversations around are around what their housing plan is, letting them know as they're in to work alongside navigators and to remove those barriers to get them housed. So prior to even having our 24/7 shelter with the navigators, we would work if we needed to. My navigators would call Chad's navigators over, you know, for Kelly's shelter. Or if somebody was a victim of domestic violence, maybe it would be Community Works or Maslow if it was. So working to get folks connected. And during this time, it is very difficult. I know a number of our folks, I mean, this is just a really big, hard problem. And you know, which is why we have such high homelessness rates in Oregon. But we do work to work with people, and we have kept people in hotels. And we, you know, prior to those HUD, asking for those HUD funds, where they were really, you know, we need money to operate. So it's like that, that we did have get people into hotels and work with them. I don't have the actual percentages, but we're always looking to make sure that nobody wants to put somebody out on the street. We're here to help people not be on the street. I don't know if that answers your question, Heidi. It's a hard one.
Okay, Kathy, and then I'm going to ask you, Cass, to go into your CARES proposal.
Thanks. I just wanted to ask Cass if you, or this might even be a question for Chad or Phil, if any of you folks who are helping shelter fire victims who have marginal status, you know, they may be not considered technically a fire victim, but they're considered fire affected. Wondering if you are applying for some of that $422 million in CDBG grants that are coming from the state for wildfire relief. Because we're seeing quite a few people, like Echo is saying, from the FEMA trailers who are getting kicked out, and also in the fortified property hotels, a couple hundred people who have that marginal status. And just wondering if you're hooking in with Karen Wheeler of the LTRG to apply for any of that money.
Thank you. That's great. We have been looking at how we qualify and working with our grant coordinator and but thanks. Yeah,
it seems like it might be a fit. I don't know. Thanks.
Thank you. Okay.
Go
Thank
ahead.
You, everyone. Okay, moving right along. So Aura is asking for $81,347 for Aura Emergency Shelter COVID prevention and operating costs for the Aura for the laundry shower trailer. In response to COVID, when we had to close our congregate shelter on East Main 10 days early, we started looking immediately for non-congregate shelter because we knew going forward, which was why our organization was first in the state of Oregon to receive the funding, because we were already, we didn't have a shelter home. And we knew we wanted a shelter home and a non-congregate shelter home. So we've gone from about a $250,000 a year budget to $2.6 million because we have 36 staff. It's 24/7. It's around the clock. We're paying for food and you name it. Chad's shaking his head because he knows. So we're also with the laundry shower trailer. It used to be run by these amazing volunteers. And of course, during COVID, we lost all of our volunteers. We don't have any volunteers currently. So I've got professional cleaning staff that do COVID cleaning that are there at the shower trailer. I've got a navigator there. And just with all the operations, we are looking to continue to pay for operations of our shelter and the laundry shower trailer. I think that covers it. I told you I would keep it short and sweet and to the point, Linda.
You did great. Questions about the CARES application. Do you understand the difference between the two? Great. Thank you so much, Cass.
Thank
you're
you.
To hang around as long as you wish.
I got to hang around because I
You're back on the trust fund presentation. So welcome, Chad. Good to see you. I don't know, Chad, Phil, are you both doing this presentation? Who's talking?
I'll do the talking, and then Chad will, and Matt is going to talk as well.
Oh, all right. Oh, hi.
And I have a PowerPoint or Google slideshow. Are we going to talk about the CARES Act funding first?
Yes.
Okay. You want me to show my screen and share that?
Yes.
Okay. Great. Okay. So first of all, thank you all for, many of you I recognize, some of you I don't, but thank you, as Cass said, for all that you do. It's an amazing contribution that you're making to the community. So I feel very humbled and honored to present to you. And Heidi, if you remember the first time we walked into the facility out at 2082 East Main Street, that was quite a while ago, and lots of things have happened. And in my role at Rogue Retreat, I've been fortunate to be involved in some different projects, but the Ashland Shelter Community out at East Main Street is a very amazing project to me, and especially since, you know, some of the things that have happened since Heidi and I were first there back in 2018. But Rogue Retreat, with 22 years experience and over 500 homeless people served under its roof every night, invites your investment of $81,347, or basically 11% of the funding, to support the 100 plus homeless being served at that facility and becoming self-sufficient on a path to being housed, and allow us to keep our doors open through October 31st of 2022. And that facility out on East Main Street now has 10 pallet shelters, and they're called pallet shelters because they're delivered on pallets, but they're really, you know, nice small units. And so there's 10 possible pallet shelters there. And the county has approved, given permission, land use permission, to use this through the end of June. And then I just found out, as Linda Reed found out recently with this afternoon with an email from Representative Marsh, that House Bill 2006 has actually been extended the version through 2023. So that's exciting news. And so I'll just give you a few updates on what is happening at the Ashland Shelter Community. It opened November, actually, I think that should be 24th. I think it's a typo there. We do, like Cass was mentioning, has shifted from being a winter shelter just in the evening hours, and then people had to leave during the day, to 24/7 coverage with staffing. It's a gated community. It has case management, which is Rogue Retreat's version of navigation. But they also have peer support. And these are individuals who are peers of those that are staying at the shelter community, and that help them work through their goals and their plan, the different things they're working on. The outreach is handled with a unique partnership with the Ashland Police Department, and it's based on the livability team model that has been used in Medford. It's unique so that people are not, you know, they don't just show up, and it's not a drop-in center. And so with this partnership, I think that the image or the relationship with the police is starting to change. And it's really interesting to see just what's happening. Chad could speak if he wants, if we have time, about the advisory committee idea. But we've had a lot of collaboration. We have over 64 community partners at Rogue Retreat. but quite a few in this local community have stepped up in order to provide meal support. The First Presbyterian Church on Mondays, Unitarian Universalist on Thursdays, UCC on Fridays, and then we had a grant that the city approved of CARES Act money for the Peace House to provide Tuesdays, Wednesdays, Thursdays, and Saturdays. But all of these commitments are basically through the end of March. So we're looking for resources and hoping to keep it going so we can go through October. If you asked us, Rich, what our statistics are to date, we've had 23 people have been housed. Permanent housing has been 7. Reunification has been 7. Transitional housing, 6, with 3 of those in the Parker House. And Parker House is a unique collaboration that Rove Retreat has. And we have a HUD grant that pays for their rent, and it pays for case management for them at Parker House. And then VA housing, as well as medical and rehab. This is just a little image of our what we call our secret sauce. And this is the case management, which is working with people, very similar to the navigation, what Cass is doing at the Aura Center. Have 15 different categories that we work with people everywhere from housing, but a lot of times they need legal help, they need help with healthcare. And so we help them with getting their documents and so forth, similar to the navigation center. We have with this particular grant, a 31% match that come in from food donations to date. I just want to give a shout out to the sheriff's folks that came and brought Christmas gifts for the community. And it's great to see this community step up and embrace these folks and provide wraparound services. So that's the PowerPoint presentation. I'm going to stop sharing and then invite Matt to, I think you're next, Matt, to share what you think is important about this particular location and what's going on there.
You know, thank you, Phil, for the presentation. And thank you, everybody, for allowing us to be here. And Cass, thank you for your presentation. It's amazing to hear the work that Aura is doing. It's, you know, my standpoint is with the Ashland Shelter community. It's a unique place that really kind of with the outreach with the police really kind of hits a population that we ran into in Medford, where it is a chronically homeless group, and so oftentimes it's a group that's underserved, and oftentimes we need to be able to have spaces like a pallet community where we can develop relationships with people and then slowly begin to ease them into services and ideally into self-sufficiency and into housing in the community. I think one of the other things that is really important about the timing of this presentation is the ESG grant that the city of Ashland got that helped create the partnership with us to start the Ashland Shelter community is also getting ready to time out. And so we're in the process of trying to put together a steering committee, which I hope some of you will end up being on, of local community members in Ashland, to help us make some plans for long-term sustainability of that site and also increasing partnerships with the other organizations that are operating out of that community as well. I'm really hoping that you guys will find it in your hearts to fund this and to give us that breathing room so that we can try to find long-term sustainable funding that can help be leveraged in. And I would just welcome all of you to reach out to us also to come down on site so that we can show you around and you can get to see the stories and see the impact that this is having on people's lives. And then Chad, I know that you're down there quite a bit and you see some things and you're connected to a number of the staff members over there. What are some of your observations from what's going on in the community there?
Thank you, Matt. By the way, my background is our clean sweep team going out and cleaning up we start out with the streets in Medford and now we're doing freeways. But that's something I really hope to bring to Ashland as well, is get our clean sweep teams down there and working in the community. But I got to say to Cass, I am so proud of Aura and what you folks do. And I really hate to be at all in any kind of seeming competition with you, because I don't want to do that. I don't want us competing for the same funds. And this really strikes at my heart, Cass. I think we both need to be in Ashland, and I think we need to work well together because we both serve the same, some of the same population, but different parts of that population. And so both organizations, I think, need to exist in Ashland. I hear about your shower trailer, man. I get it. I've got one, and how hard it is to run it, but how important it is to have that. People need to be able to get their showers and get clean, and that's a big deal. I'm just really thrilled that we are finally down in the Ashland community. I love going to the shelter. I love seeing the people there. The problems we have, and I didn't get to Cass's presentation, but are probably pretty much what she faces, extreme mental health issues, which it breaks my heart when we have to let some people go sometimes because we don't have the qualified staff to be able to take care of some of those really extreme issues. And I'm hoping that Jackson County, as they're working on their plan to get some mental health services that would be available to every part of Jackson County, I hope that comes as soon as possible. But we do see some great successes. You know, we always say in our shelter, we're probably about a 40 to 50% success rate. But then that other 5 to 6, you let them go and it breaks your heart every single time. But we sometimes get them back for a second time or a third time. Sometimes it takes that third or fourth time to for them to click, and then you finally move forward. But just thrilled to be part of Ashland, and thank you for your support. And we should just let people have questions. It says Linda Reed, but it's not Linda Reed that has her hand.
Like, kidding. I if I can just jump in with my question, it's a pretty quick one. Is there any wiggle room for eliminating the referral through the police department? My understanding was that was the only avenue in which to qualify or what have you for the services. And that may not be correct anymore, but if it is, has there been any thought and discussion to perhaps augmenting that in some way and not making it a mandatory requirement for everybody to get to go through a police department?
So I can speak from my perspective on that. So I know that the referral process was based on what was established in Medford with the urban campground there. But what I would definitely say with that is I would agree with definitely opening that up to have other points of access. In particular, with Aura and organizations that are out in Ashland, I think it would be good to be able to do referrals back and forth to one another. That way we can do warm handoffs and better wrap ourselves around individuals. And so from my perspective as the development director, which doesn't mean a whole lot, Chad could always outrank me. but I would think that that we would definitely want to do that so that we can be better reflective of the community and also better wrap ourselves around people to lift them up.
Absolutely. So I guess I'm going to bounce my question then over to Chad.
Well, I believe that we are taking in referrals from other organizations. It's not just the police. And so I think we use them extensively because they help us. Oftentimes, at least here in Medford, the police know the homeless pretty well, and they know who can work well in a shelter and who can't. And so sometimes they protect us from those people that could cause us more damage than good. And it's not like they're trying to keep anybody out. They just understand the criminality of some, the mental health of some, and that's why we like to use them. And they help find them for us. But we do take referrals, because I know I'm pretty certain, Cass, we've gotten some referrals back and forth. Yeah.
And I can address that, just that one of our first success stories was a lady that timed out of the Aura Center, and then she came over to actually it was within a week of Thanksgiving of opening, and she had the keys to her apartment, but she had the Section 8 voucher with HUD as a result of the work that Aura did with her and getting her in. So I think that there's as Chad says, opportunities, and we work with Parker House, and I think the advisory group that's happening too could address this as being, you know, are there any other entry points that we really need that we're not looking at? And based on availability, because, you know, if there's no spaces available, no beds, then that's a challenge. But when there are beds available, I think it is a good community discussion to have.
Okay, so the answer is it is not necessarily required for a person who needs your services.
Absolutely. To
get a referral from the Ashland PD.
Correct.
Okay.
Right. I have a question. How would you characterize the differences, if there are any, between who is best served at Aura and who is best served at the community shelter? Is it the same population, or if I have somebody, how would I decide where to send them?
We're going to send them to your house first, Linda. I can't speak for Cass, but when you have individual rooms like she has down there, you really need, that's a little scary for me, because you've got to really watch people pretty closely. I like the fact that when we have this one room at the Ashland shelter, we can keep our eyes on everybody. And that's a big deal to me. And there's a certain population you need to keep your eyes on more than others. You know, our pallet structures, we don't have to keep our eyes on those people as much because we've determined that they can be left to themselves and not be too dangerous. At our campground in Medford, we have 80 tent sites on one side, and those people would not fit well in a motel room. They're not ready for that kind of responsibility. Then we have pallet structures on the other side, where they could end up in a place like Aura, where they have their individual rooms and you could trust them more. And so there's different levels in the populations we serve. I don't, Cass, if you would agree with that, but different responsibilities, right?
Well, I would like to respond to that really quickly. I know this is your time, so I don't want to interlope on that, but we are serving, we're a low barrier shelter, so we do not do any background checks. We also do referrals, since we are that comprehensive service hub. We do referrals. We have people all day long ask us if they can get into our shelter, your shelter. So then we do call and do all those referrals. And my navigators are providing those services because we're here to serve the people of our community. But similar with the laundry, shower, trailer as well. But we don't do any background checks. So we may have people living with substance use disorders, involved in the criminal justice system, maybe can't be around kids. It is going swimmingly having the rooms that we have because we have the 24 shelter staff, 24/7 around the clock staff. We've got cameras. Staff are walking through. We're doing safety checks morning and night. So it's been going really, really well. And I have to say, Chad, coming from working in that great room on East Main, when you could look across the whole room and see what's going on, but it has worked out very, very well. And in fact, it's been a lot less conflict when people have their own space.
Other questions? Rich.
Okay. I'm really interested in the mental health part. I'm in other venues really involved in what's going on in the mental health system. And I'm really pleased that y'all are working in partnerships. And that's what I'm wondering about, the level of partnerships with the mental health providers and support in Jackson County, NAMI and Jackson County Mental Health, and the group that's working on coming up with a new crisis program for Jackson County. I guess what I'm really interested in the advisory committee. And so I'm just wondering, who do I talk to if there are resources for mental health connections with you all?
Oh, so
that would be helpful. And is that advisory committee or that kind of program moving quickly or slowly or what?
So thank you, Rich. I think we're probably within about a month of actually forming that group and calling the first meeting. And that, I think that would be definitely the appropriate type of conversation to be able to have at that level, is when we could pull together a steering committee where we might even have Jackson County Mental Health at the table there. Or we could bring them to the table to be able to talk about it. But I definitely, go ahead.
Well, I can talk to you then.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. And Rich, you said, how fast is it moving? This crisis team, they've been talking about this for a couple of years. They're really working on it, but it's still not
Right. I'm really intimately involved with that. But there's also things happening right now that might be helpful. Anyway, that's all.
Well, I like that, Rich, because, you know, one thing we're trying to do right now is do a partnership with Columbia Care and their Beckett Center here in Medford. You know, they have this crisis mental health facility has like 12 beds. And so we need sometimes to put somebody in there and they need sometimes to get people out of there. So we're going to try to do this reciprocal agreement where we could provide them maybe a pallet structure out at our campground where they would provide us a bed when we have someone with extreme issues. But there's not enough of those opportunities out there, Rich.
Yes. Echo, did I see your hand?
Yeah, thank you. Couple of small questions, really. I noticed when we did our emergency cold weather shelters here in Ashland, a major issue for those folks who are perhaps the harder to serve population, their pets are incredibly important to them for all sorts of reasons. And I realized I don't know what the procedures are for either at ORA or the Pallet Community Shelter for folks with animals, with their pets. Are the pets getting veterinary care? Can you tell me a little bit about that?
So Echo, we don't separate people from their companion animal.
Right.
The animal has the same basic rules that the person does. If they can't get along in the shelter, then they can't stay, you know. But I wish we had veterinary services. We don't. In Medford, there's street dogs, which we've worked with closely before, but I don't think they work down in Ashland.
Okay. That's something we could work on, maybe.
Yeah.
We do provide, we don't separate pets from their owners either. And they do. And we also work with street dogs and provide pet food. And yeah, same as Chad.
Awesome. That's great to know. I realized I didn't know that. And then for folks who do kind of fail out of the system of your program, I'm sorry.
I was going to say, we have less problems with the animals than the people.
You know, I think that's true for all of us, except with my 19-year-old cat. Anyway, and when people they've been on the street and they have some personal property, they've got a tent, they have some other stuff. Are you saving that for folks in case they, you know, need to move on and need to have that property with them, or does it get confiscated? Is it stored? What's happening with the stuff that they were using when they were living on the street?
I would imagine Cass has the same answer I do. We have limited storage, but we will store some things for them.
Okay.
We're not trying to confiscate or take anything away from them.
Okay, great. Thanks. I was curious about that.
She probably has more space than we do because they each have a room, but you know, there's limited they can bring with them. One of the biggest issues with the homeless is hoarding. You don't think that might be true, but it is. It's a constant challenge to try to get people to downsize a little bit.
Yeah. Because, you know, well, it's hard for a lot of us to stop hoarding. In my case, it's mostly books.
Okay, I think we have time for one more question. We're actually running a little behind schedule and we want to go on and hear it from Maslow. Anybody? One more? All right, I'm going to say thank you to all of you from Rogue Retreat. I appreciate you being here. I got to flip my screen over here to see. Oh, hi. Who all is here from Maslow?
Hi, I'm Corey. I'm the development director for Maslow Project. So I somehow or another, I wasn't prepared, so I wasn't know I was presenting. So anyhow, I'll do my best. I just want to say thank you to the council for the long-standing support of Maslow Project in the Ashland community. We are so grateful for the support, you know, with our connection to the high school. It just rounds out our services really well in our street outreach program. So I just wanted to give you some updates and then talk a little bit more about our programming in Ashland. So, you know, last year we served about 200 individuals in the community of Ashland. You know, across the Rogue Valley, 1 in 10 individuals or youth is considered McKinney-Vento homeless youth. And so that doesn't also count ages 0 to 5. So, you know, even with, adding on top of the Alameda fire, we're still continuing to see a large need, a very, very large need in our community. And particularly the folks that were impacted, fire affected, that didn't receive the supports of FEMA or Red Cross. So I just wanted to share a story with you that has a happy ending, because I know we've been talking about a couple years now, the Snowberry 2. So we are the permanent supportive case managing partner for Housing Authority of Jackson County. And so we finally opened up Snowberry 2 in Ashland. And so now we have 12 units that are full of families that had suffered, ongoing long-term homelessness and houselessness, and are now happy and housed. And so this young mother and her son, who had a lot of learning challenges and difficulties in school, they were living on a trailer on a piece of property that wasn't theirs. And so they lost everything in the Alameda fire. And they went through a year and a half of houselessness, and they just continually worked with their case manager, Cheyenne, in Ashland. And they were one of the families that were recently housed. In fact, I think it was Christmas Eve that they moved into their apartment complex in Snowberry 2. It's a kind of a highlight to the testament of the combination of the partnership between the Housing Authority, DHS, Department of Human Services, and the school district at Maslow. Our case manager, Cheyenne, was able to step in and advocate for this youth to stay in the district, because that's where he needed to be. That's where his supports were, and that's where he's been successful until they could find permanency within that housing community. So that's just a great example of our partnerships and being able to change lives for those families. And we wouldn't be able to do it without the support of the council, the city of Ashland, DHS, and other partners in the room. I really do believe it takes all of us to solve this problem. It's just not one effort. It's all of us that need to be at the table to help change the lives and trajectory of these folks. So our proposal for our CDBG application is to continue those wraparound support services, a full, advocacy, case management, street outreach. I know you discussed, the previous presentation, a lot of questions about mental health. There is a major crisis with youth and mental health services, and we have a dedicated counselor that we brought on a year ago because we have seen an increase in need of youth just being in crisis. And so, that's a barrier removal of, having a flexible opportunity to be able to text the counselor or to have FaceTime counseling meetings, or, the counselor goes out with them on street outreach to talk to folks that are in crisis in the parks. And so this is just one way that we're able to engage youth and help them, jump on for maybe even more larger engagement of case management services. So I think that's about all I have for you, unless there are any questions that you may have.
Any question for the Maslow grant?
No, but I would just like to say thank you for what you do.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Heidi.
We had a tour of the Snowberry 2 Maslow units, and they're lovely. And I'm so grateful that I thought you had 15, but you said 12.
I think we originally scheduled to have 15 and it went down to 12 for some reason, but Housing Authority, sorry to interrupt you, but as units become available, we do add more. So there is a possibility that it will get to 15.
My question was, how long are people allowed to stay there? Do they time out or age out?
There's no time limit. And we've had really, so right now, so we have, I think four, four different properties. We have permanent supportive housing, and we actually have a PSH case manager in Ashland and one that takes the Medford Central Point group. And so we have 40 families that are in permanent supportive housing, and we've had no evictions. We've been, except for one, we've had one eviction, and we've been in this PSH program since 2019 is when we started it. So we feel that's really successful. Yeah. And so we're going, I mean, that's our goal, is continue to work with Housing Authority to get this, because it's not just a roof over your head is not enough to, you know, as all the folks here in this room on the Zoom call, you know, there's so many other things that need to be worked on: deferred health care, deferred mental health, you help with employment. And so that case manager is able to help continue that process. And we actually, I think, have one family that is getting ready to buy a house. So yeah, I mean, it's life-changing. It's absolutely life-changing. It's some of the best stories you can get.
Great.
Thank you so much. You did a great job for not being prepared. You're awesome. Okay. So I'm going to ask the applicants to mute yourselves. And we're going to go into our discussion, review of the applications and the recommendations that we want to make to City Council. So let me just start by saying we have a very good staff evaluation and staff recommendation. We don't need to follow that. We are an independent as a commission. And at the same time, there's some pretty thorough review. And so I want to just ask Linda if you would like to comment first, before we go into just discussion.
Thanks, Linda. Again, I want to apologize to Corey for the last minute invitation. That was absolutely my oversight and my fault that they didn't get their invitation along with the rest. And so when I saw that they weren't here at the beginning of the meeting, I had a panic moment and thought, did I not invite them? So if I was making funny faces at the camera, it was because I was emailing back and forth with them to see if they wanted to come. Or were able to come, and Corey was gracious enough to come. So thank you again, Corey, and I do apologize to you and everyone else. So on the a different note, you know, with the staff evaluation, you know, primarily what the staff evaluation is just to make sure that all of the applications are consistent with the regulations, and to make sure that these are eligible projects. The other pieces of that, you know, is to measure it against the consolidated plan goals. You know, like Corey said, Maslow has applied for this grant for many, many years. They are a proven commodity. We really all are so thankful for the work they're doing in the community. And, you know, I think their outcomes speak for themselves. And I think I you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that Cheyenne has been the caseworker in the Ashland School District almost the entire time I've been here, for something like 10 or 12 years. I think she took some time off, you know, for family leave, but then she came right back. So, I mean, I think she really has relationships in the Ashland School District, and that is, to me, hugely valuable in serving the population. So, I mean, I think it's you know, a very easy thing for us to dedicate funding to this, to continue this program. The other two applications for the, or the other application for the CDBG regular program, as many of you, or maybe some of you may remember, the city receives an allocation, which, by the way, we have not received yet. So we do not know what our allocation will be. So it could be more, it could be less. We do also have some program income from some activities that didn't move forward that we'll reprogram, and we could potentially use that to backfill. So all of the funding we receive, minus the allocation for administration, which is 20%, can be used to fund capital projects. So, 100%. And then we are relegated to just a 15% amount of the total allocation that we can provide for activities like Maslow's activity. So, you know, the simple thing to do for staff was just to separate out the $25,000 for Maslow and then provide the remainder for the only capital project that applied for the regular CDBG grant, which was the ORA application. So then moving on to the CARES Act, some of you may remember that this is funding that we received
out of the CARES Act, and we received it in two allocations. And we have used a lot of that funding during the pandemic emergency, very quickly allocated to needed projects as they arose. But toward the end, when we thought, I mean, we're not at the end, but as things started to, I think, even out, we held on to some of that money, and we have been using it for different things, just the same thing, emergent things that have arisen. But we kind of got to the point where, you know, there weren't as many emergent things. And so we decided to put it back into the RFP process, as there were a few different organizations who were interested in accessing that funding. I think it, just for staff, the way staff viewed it, the organizations that applied are working in partnership, are both needed services, both eligible activities, both very valuable to the community. And so staff recommended really just splitting the money evenly in order to accommodate both. And as Linda pointed out, your allocations do not have to align with the staff's recommendations. They have not always. It doesn't make them any, it's not a diminished thing. These are all eligible activities. These are all, you know, organizations doing wonderful work in the community, needed work in the community. So it, yeah, I would just, certainly if you have questions for me, I'm happy to answer them.
Okay. Anyone on the commission want to speak to your thoughts, your scoring? Rich.
Well, you know, even while I'm kind of nervous about always accepting the staff recommendations, I read these grants about four times. I went over them and thinking about the needs on all levels, and I couldn't come up with anything different, particularly when you take into both what we're going to be discussing a little bit, the Housing Trust Fund. I thought the notion of balance within their recommendations really makes us have. Now, Chris sent in his recommendations, and he had just a slight differences, but I couldn't tell why there were exactly slight differences. But I think for us, without going into incredibly depth about each one of these grants, I think the best solution is to work with the staff recommendations.
Anyone else want to speak? Jackie.
I similarly read the grants over and over again too, and was trying to figure out, you know, I felt like I was splitting the baby in half, or, you know, it was trying to weigh one against the other and all of that. And I just, I thought the staff recommendation is very wise. And so I agree with the staff recommendation.
Heidi.
I also agree with the staff recommendation. I, as my colleagues did, went back and forth and back and forth. And the bottom line is both organizations need money, or the people that suffer are the people on the street who will be on the street if neither of these organizations are funded. I wish we had more money so we could fully fund each of them, but we don't. And we may get more as we'll see what comes through. So I guess splitting it makes a lot of sense. I love what Maslow does. It seems like a lot of bang for our buck. And they have a much broader fundraising community to draw from. It's not just Ashland, and they help, as all these organizations do, help our whole entire valley. So I'm grateful for them all. I wish we could fund them more fully.
Does anybody want to have a different opinion? Echo.
I don't have a different opinion. I actually, but I do have a question. So if since we know that the actual dollar amounts are still a little unfirm, not quite firmed up yet, is the process that changes in the funding levels would come back to the commission? It would just go to city council?
You know, if we even know by then what our most of the time we know by now, but sometimes it's the congressional piece. So they haven't released our allocation. We could be getting more. I mean, we reprogrammed the, you guys may remember the Ashland Fire and Rescue Fall Prevention Program that we funded in 2018. They did get an extension through the pandemic because the nature of their activity was in being in the home, doing assessments with seniors. But then that project just has not moved forward, and we did not get an additional extension request. So we are reprogramming that funding, which is about $23,000. It technically is capital money, so it could not be utilized for public services, which is fine because MASLA is not asking for more than that. So potentially we could add that to the regular CDBG program to fund ORA's project a little bit more. But it really does depend on what allocation we get in the end. We got a little bit more money last year than we had been getting the previous couple of years, partially because of the pandemic. I don't know that won't be true again. So we may get more or less. I just don't know. And I really am so frustrated that they haven't released our allocation yet. And then with regard to the CARES Act money, that money is pretty set. And it's because it's that special allocation that has a mega waiver on it that allows us to use it essentially for anything with like 5-day notice. So, and we have been dipping into that pot as much as we could and prudently, to fund these emergent things as they have arisen. So we've sort of eroded away at that. And so that one probably won't change.
Thanks.
I would entertain a motion, especially if it's both CBDG and CBDG CARES encompassed in one motion. That would be really lovely to hear about right now.
Well, I guess I'll do it because we just need to move along. I move that we accept the staff recommendations for CDBG and CDBG CARES for.
And I'll second whatever Rich says.
Motion and seconded. I think everybody's here understanding the motion. Any questions? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? It passes. Thank you.
And we all wish it could be more.
We do. We do. I just want to say, before we move on, how much I appreciate the interchange between Chad and Cass in that discussion, because it is just the nature of the beast that you end up competing for the same dollars. That's how it is. But it doesn't mean that you are in competition. And that was very clear in the way that you respect each other and discuss things together. I just really appreciated that. Mm-hmm. All right, let's move on to the Affordable Housing Trust Fund presentations. Take a deep breath, start into a new chapter. Who is here from Habitat?
I'm here. I'm working on my computer, Denise.
Okay.
Hello.
Are you ready to go?
I am just about. I'm pretty easy here. I'm just working on my computer, which is not letting me in. There we go. There we are. So thank you for having me, and thank you for doing this by Zoom. I'm a little under the weather, so if I'm sniffling and sneezing and coughing, but I'm not. I'm COVID-free. Have been tested. So I appreciate this, and I've recognized some of you, and I want to thank you again. I feel like I'm the oddball out because I'm not seeking any funding for emergency housing or unhoused people. But long-term affordability is very important as well. And it is, I think, especially important in Ashland. Just as I stated in my proposal that people that work in Ashland can't afford to live there. I graduated from Ashland myself and my family, and I worked at U.S. Bank for 10 years in Ashland and know a lot of people from there, but I had to live in Medford because I couldn't afford to be there. And I know that that is often the case. So I think that we can start providing some affordable housing. And when we think sometimes of affordable housing in Ashland, it's a little different. The picture's a little different than thinking of people on a poverty level term. The Ashland level for affordability begins at about 80%, whereas our affordability level begins at about 40%. We typically build homes for people that are low income, and for our typical program, it's between 40 and 70%. And we build the home and we sell it for what they're paying back to us what they can afford. There's times that we may subsidize part of that. And sometimes we'll put it into a silent second that we'll forgive over a period of 30 years. We carry the note, they make that payment to us, and we use that to help build new homes. Our partnership with Ashland is unique and different, and I'm so excited. It's taken us a while to work that. I've been with Habitat for 20 years, and I've been working with Linda for probably half of that, at least that time, and Brandon Goldman, trying to find a compromise so that the Habitat program will fit into the affordability program that Ashland wanted. And I think we might have finally gotten there. So... Yay. So what we have done is we've increased our income level to 80% AMI, which means that we want people that can afford to pay a little bit more than what we're selling houses for in Medford. And part of that is because we know the houses are going to be valued at higher cost. And we also know that it's going to cost us more. We've been very fortunate to have a gift from the developer, KDA Homes, due to the fabulous inclusionary zoning that Ashland has. Yay! They've been required to include part of their subdivision as affordable housing. And for most developers, they can't build affordable housing and stay in business. So sometimes they're doing some rental units, but it was in their best interest and our best interest to just donate that to us. So they're in the final stages and steps of their approval for the subdivision. And in that commitment is a pledge to us of 8 units or 8 lots that it will be shovel ready to go. We thought that we would be starting it already, but they're still in some processes, which is good because we're still in some fundraising mode. So it's a very generous opportunity for us to provide eight homes in Ashland. In the 35 years that Habitat has been in the Rogue Valley, we've built 3 in Ashland so far. So to provide 8 is very exciting. And if you don't unaware, it's there on the corner there of Mountain and Main Street. And we have a lot of donors that are people from Mountain Meadows who are excited about it, which has been great news for us. They're calling and can't wait to go watch us build. So we're excited about that. We think the reception overall in Ashland will be good. However, in order to agree to the donation from the developer, they want us to build the same as they do, which totally makes sense. We don't want low income housing to look different than the housing going into the units. So 2 of the largest components of that are metal roofs, which is much more expensive than the roofing that we usually provide. And in fact, most of the roofing that we provide is donated to us by Gaff Roofing. So this will be a much higher expense. And the second component is it all must be net zero with solar. And we have done those a few times when we've found opportunities of rebates and grant awards. And we have some Habitat homeowners in Medford that are seeing a net zero in their inner utility costs, which for a low income person is just as important as the affordable monthly house payment. But we know that both of those components are going to increase our cost by $30,000 to $40,000. And that's going to be a lot for us to subsidize if that's what we have to do. We can only sell the home for what they can afford to pay back to us. So we're seeking funding to help offset some of those additional costs that we normally don't have. Our budget for homeownership or home construction is typically about $80,000 that we're raising for each house that we build. We raise those funds locally. We've found no Mackenzie Scott Foundation yet to sustain us. And government funding is very limited, as well as any funding outside the state or the parent company of Habitat International. So all funds are raised locally for each project, and then the funds are reinvested into the program for future homes. I've talked really fast, so I'm willing to answer any questions that you have.
Anyone? Heidi.
The numbers didn't quite add up. You said 20,000 for per unit for solar and 20,000 for roof, but you're asking for 60. So that 20 and 20 would be 40.
So we're going to be building two houses at the same time, because the first project will be a duplex style home. And so I don't have the exact numbers. It's between 20 and 30,000 additional cost. And so I just averaged it, and we'll be building two at the same time. So I'm asking for 30,000 for each one of those units that we're going to start.
Okay. Hi, Echo.
So those are two duplexes. So it'd be four families.
No, I'm sorry. One duplex, which will be two homes.
Okay. Two homes. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about how the buyers, owners finance their mortgages again? I was a little unclear about that.
Sure. Well, we actually finance for them.
So they don't have to go through the bank. The bank's not going to reject them because their income's too low.
No, we are the lender. So we're the builder and the lender, and we will carry their note. So that's why they're paying it to us just little bit for a 30-year time period. And to comply with the Ashland's affordability program, they will also receive some equity share if they were to sell in between that time. But the house will remain monitored by the Ashland Affordable Home Program to determine a future home sale cost and those exact numbers for equity.
Okay. Does Habitat own the ground?
The homeowner will own the ground. The homeowner will own the ground and the home that it sits on. And they will, it will just be like any typical homeowner, although they will own it all. There'll be a restriction for their resale, and they'll gain some equity along that mortgage period. If they don't pay, we will foreclose just like any other bank will do.
Okay. Cool. Thank you for clarifying that. Mm-hmm.
I'd just like to ask, are the costs for the roof and the solar estimates, have you already gotten a proposal for those, or is that just a random guess?
That is an estimate, not a formal proposal. I've just talked to both of the suppliers, and those are the ballpark figures that they've given me. I have not received the house plans yet, which are being provided to us as well with the land. And because we do need to build in compliance with what the developer asks for, I haven't seen that. We haven't received the plans yet, so I've not been able to get a formal estimate. Those are ballpark figures that both solar and reverse have given me. Jackie?
It's not so much a question as just saying I'm so excited to see these affordable homes going in that are high quality, that are looking, you know, at ecology and, you know, fire safe roofs. And it's just, you know, we've been wanting this for years, right, Linda? I mean, this is, you know, this is such a wonderful opportunity. And KDA appears to me to be such a great developer to be working with. So I'm very excited about the project.
We are excited. And we believe that there may be more on the horizon as well in partnership with KDA. Yay.
Linda, you're muted.
Sorry, I'm on my iPad. It's hard to get it to play with me. Thank you, Denise. I'm glad that you were able to join us, and I really am happy about this proposal. Let's go on to Cass and the Aura proposal.
Congratulations, Denise. That's awesome. So we are applying for Affordable Housing Trust Fund dollars, and we are, I just want to give you some numbers. We're applying for the pass-through dollars for keeping people housed and getting people housed, and for the Aura Resource Center. So we, in the past fiscal year 2021, helped 273 unhoused families, 392 people, including 67 children, move into new housing, and 302 families at risk of eviction, 576 people, including 178 children, retain their housing. That is such a big part of what we do at Aura. It's so much easier to keep somebody housed, as we all know, than it is to get them housed, especially if they have other barriers, if they have credit issues, or they've been involved in the criminal justice system, or you name it. I mean, it's just hard enough for someone like me to even try to buy a house. Well, I don't even know what that's saying, but so it is really important. And part of our goal and excitement at Aura is that we are really a comprehensive hub. We are a place that people go in Southern Oregon when they need help. And with the navigation that we provide and the way in which we provide services, and we're trauma informed, and staff go through de-escalation and learning how to create healthy boundaries, but in a way where we're non-judgmental, we're not getting out in front of people and telling them what they need to work on. We really are building the relationship to come alongside of them. We really do see ourselves as such a needed part of our community in Southern Oregon in response to homelessness, but also getting people newly housed with the relationships that we have with our community partners, like I was talking about, and keeping people housed. So that is a huge part of what we're doing. It's always been the core of our mission at Aura since 2014. We work ourselves. We also work fundraising with community partners to help folks. So that's what we're asking for with the Affordable Housing Trust Fund dollars. And I did want to add one quick thing in response, because I didn't want to step when it wasn't my turn. But in response to your question, Rich, about mental health, part of the vision of what we have at Aura and at the Aura Center is really that hub for people that need help. And it's so difficult to get mental health services for somebody. We can all day long even get folks signed up for a mental health appointment in Medford, and that 11 miles just to get them to Medford and have them make their appointment, or even the amount of time they have to wait. So having La Clinica in the Aura Center and having a counselor there that's going to be there 5 days a week, having a nurse that will be providing medical care with oversight by a nurse practitioner, Patty Shine, who is the medical director for the La Clinica Mobile Health Unit, will be overseeing the center. And so we're very excited about that, as well as bringing in other community partners, because when somebody walks through your door, you have an opportunity in that moment, if they're in stress or trauma, or to really connect them to those programs and services right there and help remove those barriers. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Cass.
Yeah.
Questions? Either we're at the tail end of the meeting, or you just did a great presentation.
I think it was probably, no, I'm just...
Rich, is that sort of raising a hand? No? Okay. All right, then. Let's go on to Rogue Retreat. Is that you, Phil?
Are you the presenter? I'll go ahead and then ask Matt to add to it. But a couple things that I wanted to share with you that I think you know, I don't know how much you know about Rogue Retreat, but, you know, one of the things I find myself learning about since, you know, 2019, when I started working with them, is what I want to share with you is some of those things about some of the things they're doing in the Rogue Valley. And so the mission of Rogue Retreat is to create opportunities for those experiencing homelessness to have hope. And as we know, you know, homeless people typically are hopeless people in many situations. And so I think that with that foundation, what we've discovered is that hope is really at the top of our success model at Rogue Retreat. And but at the bottom is the shelter and housing, the stability that's needed, and the creative and the, you know, the solutions that stabilize their lives so that they can call it home while they're getting their lives together. So the next level is what we call our secret sauce, which is the supportive services, the navigation, counseling, referrals to other people, but then community partners and having different service providers that join us with the participants and help them reach their potential. But I would put you in the category of the funders and individuals and organizations who invest your time, your money, in furthering our mission of hope. And we lift the spirits of the brokenhearted, spark belief and positive outcomes, and we infuse the model with goodness. And so I wanted to just share that with you, and then share with you also that part of having 500 people under a Rogue Retreat 24/7, 365 is really what's developed over time are these six tiers of housing. And this allows us to move people from like the urban campground, you know, where we have tents and we have pallet shelters. And then they can move up to, we have a new warming center in Grants Pass that just opened up also around Thanksgiving time, as well as the Ashland shelter. Then we have the Kelly shelter that's been around for a little bit longer and 64 beds. And then we hope to move that program into the navigation center that opens up in Medford by June. So it'll be 100 beds. We also have the Redwood Inn, which is a Project Turnkey purchased facility. And I noticed a question about fire survivors. This and the Gateway RV Park specifically target those fire victims, fire survivors. And it's pretty amazing to see what is happening with those. And I would invite you to tour those facilities when you have a chance, as well as Hope Village and the Kelly Shelter and the Urban Campground. We also opened up last fall around the same time, Foundry Village is a tiny house village in Grants Pass. And then we have 44 apartments. We have recovery houses for men and women. We have medically assisted treatment housing for women. So all of these fit into a nice group of transitions from people from one level to another once they've, you know, so we have options within ourselves, but we have the same challenges that Cass has at Aura with finding permanent housing for people outside of our existing transitional housing. But I wanted to share this with you just as sort of, and the history of Rogue Retreat that's been around for 22 years, you know, started out with recovery and then moved to homelessness after that. And, but we find that the need is so great. And we feel very blessed to have 14 different facilities open and having the one here in Ashland and working with folks in this particular community. And I draw your attention to this. I know you're not going to be able to read this, but this was included in the proposal. But I wanted to give you a little bit of information about the types of activities and deliverables that what people are working on and the responsible people as part of the team. and then how these are ongoing activities that are needed to keep the program safe, but also keep people moving and transitioning into housing. So I just wanted to share that with you it's a lot to make a 24/7 program work, but a 24/7 program that has guest hosts, it has case managers, it has peer support manager, but it has an infrastructure that also allows the expenses to go a long way, or the revenue that's generated and goes a long way to cover expenses for the organization. So wanted to share that with you. And I don't know if there's anything, Matt, that you want to add, but I do want to say, related to Rich, your concern about data collection with housing, we have a very good HMIS service point expert with George Jarvis. And we're looking at what do we do to measure how people do when they get into housing. And what we find is that part of the challenge is that once they move into housing, they don't have an obligation to come back to us to tell us how they went. They've kind of moved on with their lives. So we offer 6 months of case management and 12 months of case management, and we follow up with them. But a lot of times they've sort of moved on. But I think that having accurate data, and I think as this advisory committee gets collected and as the new navigation center comes on board in Medford, I think we're in a unique position as a community to really strengthen the partnerships that we all have together so that we have a continuum of care and coordinated entry process with everything. So with that, I'll check and see if Matt has anything to add.
Phil, I thank you for that comprehensive report and everything. I'm glad that you shared that graphic of the kind of that community model. Could you share your screen again and go back to the pyramid? I just wanted to add a couple things just to kind of talk about how we kind of fell into a lot of what we're doing. So one of the things that I like to say with our mission statement of creating opportunities for those experiencing homelessness to have hope, I love Chad, he's our visionary, and in many ways, watching him as the executive director, he has found creative ways to say yes to things that historically a lot of us have said no to in the past. And right now we're in a very big a moment of opportunity for not only shelter services, but also the build out of affordable housing. And so one of the things that we ran into as we began really going into this hypergrowth about 5 years ago with adding shelter beds and everything, is the community has really come together to really build this community model. This is not just a rogue retreat model. This is really a community model that we're building in Southern Oregon. Every single one of us is a part of this. Every single one of us plays a role in this. And right now, because of the successes that we're having with establishing shelter programs and getting them going here in Southern Oregon, we're actually being looked at as a model, as an entire region, as to how other communities and other regions can replicate this type of programming. And so one of the things that Phil gets the opportunity to help with is he also works with our consulting. So we're working currently with the Klamath Tribes, the City of Roseburg, and also the community of Redmond, as we're coaching them on how to do this type of work over in their own communities. And so it's just really exciting to be able to do that, because earlier today, Chad and I were on a phone call with the City of Portland, their mayor's office, because they were interested in learning how Southern Oregon was doing this and how they could possibly urbanize some of this to go to Portland. And so it's really just, it's difficult work, but right now as a community and as a region, Southern Oregon is unique. We have strong partnerships and we have strong community support for the work that we're doing. And I just wanted to say that it's really all of us in this room right now that creates this pyramid, and it has a ripple effect outside of Southern Oregon.
Great. Thank you. Thank you. I just want to say before we go into discussion, the thing that I'm personally most struck with is I'm not a long-termer in the Valley, but in the time that I've been sitting on this commission, we've gone from a completely volunteer only wintertime minimal shelter to two organizations that have grown rapidly and are really beginning to, I feel like as a community, we're really beginning to wrap our arms around this problem and support agencies. But it's, I am a long-term student of organizations, and to grow as quickly, especially as Rogue Retreat and Aura have grown in the last 4 years, 5 years, is phenomenal. And I want to commend both of you. It's a lot of work to keep up with that kind of growth. All right. Having said all of that, Echo, up to you.
A couple of things. I was watching random YouTube news segments yesterday and noticed that the unused Wapato jail outside of Portland is now becoming this kind of totally wraparound service center that both Rogue Retreat and ORA are trying to be obvious on a much smaller scale than up in Multnomah County. But it was really good to see that unused building, which totally blew my mind, that it was just sitting there. So it sounds like they're doing what you're trying to do here, which is awesome. And the other comment is Joy and I and Rich and Linda have been working for a few months now on emergency weather sheltering. And we had a better process for that this winter with our cold weather days. Yay, I think our new city manager has kind of wrapped his arms around at least some of the work we've done. But we're looking at summer and we're looking at probably, you know, 110, 115 degree days again, and then smoke. And we're going to need help with emergency heat and smoke sheltering here in the south part of the valley. So I just want to plant that little idea in the back of your brains. We ran our emergency cold weather shelter with practically no money at all. And it serves a population that is often not likely to be terribly successful at Rogue Retreat or even at ORA. And Joy knows this better than anybody and on this call. So please think of us as we grapple with what's coming.
Well, I would just like to add to that, as you guys learn what you guys need or anything, please feel free to reach out. I'm pretty sure all of us would be willing to jump in to see how we could help.
Great. Thank you. Any more questions about this proposal? All right, I'm going to draw this to a close then, because we are getting short on time. I'm going to ask the applicants to mute yourselves. You are certainly welcome to stick around. Again, we have a staff recommendation. We are not required to follow that recommendation. And so I would open this up to any discussion. Heidi.
I'm wondering if we should not allocate all of these funds in the Housing Trust Fund and perhaps save a little in case we need some for the summer emergency shelters. I hadn't thought of it until Echo mentioned the shelters, and I don't know what the needs will be.
Linda.
So we do have more money in the Affordable Housing Trust Fund that we can address the sheltering concerns. It is on the, it's getting on the council look ahead for the severe weather shelter policy recommendations from this group to move to the council. And part of that is to ask them to look at where they could dedicate funding. So I won't go too far into this, but you know, you may remember that during the budgeting process last year, that the recommended or the proposed budget was to only use 1 year of housing or of marijuana tax to fund the Housing Trust Fund and then to use the sale of property to offset the second year. We actually had a leftover balance from the previous year of $48,000, and off of that we also I think earned $2,000 in interest. So we started the year with $50,000. Apparently what happened was that when the budget committee decided to keep it, to not go with the recommendation, but to keep the housing trust fund money in getting both years of the marijuana tax, the money was not appropriated at that time. So we actually only have appropriated $50,000, which we've been spending. However, they will do we are going to be doing a budgeting reconciliation, I guess, on April 5th. So right before the meeting where the council will make a final allocation determination with this money. Because of all of that, I did not release the full amount of money that we had. I held some back because I was getting different information from accounting and I just didn't want to overextend ourselves. So we will have plenty of money to cover any funding that we need for emergency shelter if we fully allocate the money that we have put here, I guess is what I would say. So we're okay money-wise, especially after they take the contingency loan and put it back into. So essentially the marijuana money is in the account. We just can't spend it because we never got spending authority.
Gotta love Linda Reed. We got the best staff ever.
Well,
thank you.
It's one of those tricky things where, yeah, anyway.
Yeah, Linda knows how to get blood out of turnips. It's pretty amazing.
Well, and you know, and the issue with the trust fund money is that if we don't spend it, it will get taken away. It's eyed closely because it's available money without a lot of strings attached that the city could co-opt. So you don't want to save too much of it, but you don't want to spend all of it. It's a fine line, and I really do appreciate that Linda knows how to walk that line. Okay, back to these proposals, Kathy.
I just want to appreciate you also, Linda, for all the materials that you sent. As a new commissioner, I actually knew everything that was going on. So I felt very pleased with myself, but it's because of you. And this rating sheet, I really, really helped me to break down evaluating each of the proposals. The only thing I couldn't really do was decide whether or not CDBG funds are the most appropriate funding source for the project, not knowing, you know, all the other sources of funding and their background for each organization, but everything else was really clear. So
I'm glad. Thanks, Kathy. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Oh.
I think I would be inclined to, just for the sake of discussion anyway, make a motion. Again, the staff recommendation seems reasonable to me. I am particularly supportive of Habitat getting some workforce housing. It's such a critical need, and I really want to encourage that and hope that we can get more. That would be awesome. I wish there was more money there to hand out. So, you know, as the saying goes, sort of splitting the baby is painful. But I think I would move that we accept the staff proposal or the staff assessment to allocate $60,000 to Habitat, $55,000 to OBRA, and $55,000 to Rogue Retreat.
That's a motion. Is there a second? Rich. Discussion. Linda, were you going to say something? No. Okay. Discussion. All right. Heidi? Muted.
It says I'm unmuted. Can you hear me?
Yes. Now we can.
I'm a little uncomfortable with just throwing money at projects without having actual amounts in advance. That's usually we have an exact amount. And I fully support Habitat. I like what they do. I personally donate to them. But just in terms of our accountability, I wish we had a clearer proposal with amounts. That's all I want to say.
If I can respond to that, I'm in the process of doing a little remodeling, and between the time I get the bid and, you know, 2 weeks later, it's changed because the price of lumber, the price of everything is so volatile right now. So I really appreciate what you're saying, Heidi, but I'm not sure how substantial, I mean, how firm you could count on a bid if it was in hand now and the money's not going to be here for a couple months.
Yeah.
Jackie, were you going to say something else?
Basically, it was going to say a similar thing that you're saying, Linda. And also that I think we can feel that with Linda Reed sort of watchdogging how this money is given out and the expenses, how it equals out, I feel comfortable with the amount that is in the current motion for Habitat.
And I would just, go ahead, Heidi.
We have a history with Habitat. We had to take some money back because they couldn't complete a previous project. This is different. This is new housing. So that's not as likely to happen. But
yeah. Right. Yeah. And I would also say, I mean, just to sort of back up what Jackie said, we will do a contract. It will have a timeline. And if there is a need to do any sort of amendment or a change order, we can do an extension if they need a timeline extension. Generally, the contract is for 1 year. And so that is a criteria for when we decide about the funding, is the readiness to proceed, because we would want to choose someone who needs the money to use it now rather than sort of sitting on it and waiting. So I appreciate that Denise, you know, is using this funding for the first two that they're going to build rather than sort of asking for funding for all eight that they won't be probably completing in a 1 year to 2 year period. And I also recognize, and Denise could correct me if I'm wrong, you know, one of the changes that we made to our ordinance, our affordable housing ordinance, was to sort of divorce affordable housing projects from the developers' projects, because that was sort of the feedback that we got in that big process was market rate developers cannot develop affordable housing. It doesn't pencil for them. But what they can donate the property, as they have in this sense, but that they're the development timelines need to be divorced from one another, because affordable housing providers have one timeline with their grant applications and their needs, and private market developers may be able to move differently or in some cases move less quickly. And so we needed to be able to have that space between those two. But this is actually our first sort of public-private partnership since the 2010 Verde Village Rice Park development. And so this is a bit of a test case for us about how is this going to work. And I believe that Denise is in the piece right now where they're still very reliant on KDA because the property has not been separated. So they can't take their development proposals and move in their individual directions. And so Denise is sort of at the mercy, from what I understand, Denise, of the private market developers still at this point, because she's relying on them for some of their plans and some of their infrastructure and then paperwork and legal pieces to get that separated.
Is it appropriate for me to add something?
Sure.
Yes, it is.
Just to address that concern, Heidi, that you have is I don't think an approval is going to mean that Linda's going to submit for a request for payment to us and we'll have that funding just to spend. You know, we are going to wait until we're ready. It's possible it wouldn't be that much, and so that's the amount that we would request from Linda at the time. So it's not just kind of a carte blanche, just send us a check. It's we expect to be ready within this next year, and we'll prove it to Linda when we ask for the funds.
This is Rich. I just want to say this was my highest priority because it's funding a different model of housing that we need a whole lot more of. So I am just absolutely critical that we get this funding going. We have this kind of relentless gentrification. I live in a poor street. A few houses down, there's an old house and it just went on sale. You know what they wanted? $550,000 for an old house on a relatively modest, poor street.
Wow.
This is an absolute different model that we got to get a whole lot of. And so I'm just, that's why for me, this was a number one priority.
Echo.
And Rich and I are representatives on the Housing Production Strategy Task Force. There was just an initial meeting of that group just the other night. We need to be looking for models of how to produce middle housing, and what Habitat is doing is an example of that missing middle that is really required under state law now. I think it's House Bill 2003, maybe it's House Bill 2001. I forget which one it is, but one of those, 2001. So we need models, we need test cases, we need examples. And I think this Habitat proposal gives us a model that perhaps we'll be able to scale up in the future.
All righty, ready to vote? Anybody need critical information before you vote? All righty then. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? It passes. Thank you. And I really want to say thank you to all of our community partners. It is so helpful to have you here. It's heartening to us as commissioners to hear from you. Most of you we see every year or every other year in this cycle. But it's very heartening. And your proposals and your presentations were phenomenal. So thank you, thank you, thank you. You're welcome to stay for the rest of the meeting. We just have a little bit more to go. Or feel free to click off if it's dinner time for you. Bye, Phil. Bye, Cass. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
So this will go to the City Council. So this is a recommendation. It's not a decision. But like everything we do, we're passing it on to the people who make the decisions from here. We're almost out of time. We went over on a couple of things. We went under a couple of things. I'm like really happy that we're pretty close to the finish line. We only have Linda here from our liaison reports. So that you're the only liaison we have. Do you have anything you want to add? You've done a big job already today.
I don't think that I have really anything to add. Things are just seem to be moving right along. All of these items will go to the council at their regular meeting on the 19th. We were trying to get on the council look ahead with the severe weather shelter, but it looks like my boss, the community development director, Bill Molnar, and myself will be meeting with city manager Joe Lessard early next week to discuss when that's going to get on the agenda. And I think it's going to be going to a study session. So I will let you all know when that happens so that you can, and probably we may need a representative from the commission, probably someone from the subcommittee to kind of share with the council their, since these recommendations did come from you all, and then answer any questions that they have, and then probably get direction from the council as to any next steps, which hopefully will just be, hey, let's write a resolution and bring it back to the council at their next regular meeting. So that's the process for that. And I'll find out more next week and I'll let you all know. And then some of you have been curious about the $1 million that the city of Ashland received from the state of Oregon. So the city of Ashland did receive $1 million from the state of Oregon out of a strange budget shortfall. They just called us up on a Friday afternoon and said, hey, guess what? The state legislator is giving every entitlement community in the state of Oregon $1 million. There's 14 of us and you're one of them. So we got our contracts for that money. It's been a challenge because it was over administrations. We've just had a lot of, things are getting worked out in other buildings that I'm not in. So we got the contract and it's going to be moving forward. Accounting has to do a supplemental budget to essentially accept the money. It wasn't a grant application. We didn't apply for it. So we don't have to ask the council that, but the council does have to accept the money. And then a revenue and expenditure line will have to be created in the budget to take the money in and spend it, of course. And so once that process is completed, we'll probably simultaneously, we will also be talking with Joe about how we will put that money out to the community and what that process will look like. There has been a lot of interest in that funding, as anyone can imagine, and it has essentially no strings. It is like one line item in the legislative you know, whatever that thing is called that was enrolled or enacted or whatever. And it's essentially affordable housing and homeless programs, like, and it has to be spent by June of 2023. So we've got a little over a year to get it allocated and spent. And so that's our only stipulation so far that we will have as guidance on how to allocate that funding. But other than that, that's kind of where we're at with my up-to-date news.
That's a pretty happy note to end the meeting on.
Yeah.
Surprising late Friday call for sure. Like, oh, thanks for that million.
Oh, all right. $1 million. Fine. Great. And there will be more to come on that. There is a lot of interest in it. Our next meeting is the 28th of April. We will be electing officers at that meeting for the upcoming year. And I think that is also the term limits. The people who are going off the commission will be going off at this meeting or not that meeting?
Next meeting.
Next meeting. Good. I wasn't quite prepared for that yet. So yeah, one more.
One more meeting.
One more meeting. Yeah. Hang in there. Don't go yet. Please, if you have any interest in serving in any leadership position on this commission, give Linda Reed a call. We will proceed from there. Thank you very much. This is a incredibly complicated meeting most years, and it seemed to me this year to just go smoothly.
Yes.
I'm very grateful to you and to all our presenters. So good job, everybody.
And good job, Linda. Yes, thank you for all your work.
Thank you, oh my Linda. God.
Yes.
Yeah. And Linda Rapon chairing. You did so good today.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, you drove it.
I appreciate all of your guys' participation in this and great questions. You know, I don't ever ask questions of the applicant, by the way. It's not really right. My place. So I'm so glad you guys all get to do that and that I think you ask really good questions. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody. Go have a nice dinner and a good evening.
You guys too.
Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.